Hi, it's Pat Finelli from Pizza Pizza. Right now, get two medium pizzas with four toppings combined, two free dipping sauces, and six free Coke, all for only $18.99. Perfect for game night, a school night, or the office lunch. And ordering just got a whole lot easier. You can order from our award-winning mobile apps and even win more food. Click and pick Pizza Pizza today.
9-6-7-11-11, Pizza Pizza. 9-6-7-11-11.
This is the number one noon hour hockey show in Canada. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back on the air, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrigan for Darren Millard all week long. So if you don't like me, I apologize in advance. We'll try to let Billy Jaffe and Scott Morrison
take
as much of the recreation as possible. Well, in that case, Billy, you can do two things. You can
Retry the veal?
Nothing and like it. How about that, Billy?
What about the third leave?
You could also leave as well. I mean, you can do anything in this life once.
All right, come on, we're out of here.
As we found out. Finally, what I've wanted, my own show. All right, enough of you two chimps. Nick Kipper is going to join us in a couple of moments from Florida. General manager's meetings going on the next couple of days in sunny FLA. In the meantime, quick thought on, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Ottawa Senators, but last night, again, the highlight around Canada is the Hamburglar, Andrew Hammond, winning again for the Ottawa Senators, beating the Philadelphia Flyers. Faint playoff hopes as they may be. There is a flicker, but just around the table, quick thought before we get to Kipper. Thoughts on the job that Andrew Hammond is doing and keeping in the back of your mind, the back of your pocket, he's a UFA come July 1.
Well, before you go down the contract road, you need a bigger body of work, I think, before you make that decision. But it's been a fabulous story, and the kid's been dynamite 11 games, two goals or less in every one. That hasn't happened since 1938. We saw a burger tossed on the ice after the game last night, so we'll see if that becomes a trend. And you know what? After a prickly week last week, it was kind of nice. There he gets the burger there for those watching on television.
Nice touch.
But it was kind of nice after a prickly week last week to see Dave Cameron have a little bit of fun with the goaltending situation.
Sure.
Before the game, announcing that he walked into church and the priest said, go with the young guy.
Yeah.
So that was kind of nice, too. But it's been a nice story. And I'll tell you what, you look around the league and we've seen a few nice goaltender stories.
And we'll get to the Rangers goalie in a second. But Billy, your thoughts on
let's just assume there's a nice value-added marketing deal there for the Ottawa Senators.
Oh, we think.
You would think, right? You know,
and it's an organic one, too. All the marketers are abuzz about this one.
Right. I mean, this is unbelievable. Does his agent say, well, listen, I mean, you know, we'll take 1% of it. I know it doesn't work that
way.
I'm kidding.
Agency fee of 15%. Yeah,
they're not going to take it in hamburgers. That's for sure. They'll take it in cold, hard cash. But no, listen, it's wonderful. It's great. I will thoroughly admit I'm surprised a little. Mm-hmm. Just because when you base it on his body of work before, eventually you think, right? Law of averages, but it doesn't, that's the beauty of sports, but that he hasn't come back to those law of averages yet.
Well, here's the thing, too. Here's what you have to ask yourself, and you alluded to it. There isn't that body of work yet. All the shooters haven't had a look at Andrew Hammond.
Yep.
And we still don't know whether he's closer to Patrick Waugh or Steve Penny. We just don't know.
And there's something to be said, though, just for the energy that he has given his team. It's amazing from a team perspective, and you guys know this. When you start hearing and you start believing and you start feeling things, you know what I mean? And from a team perspective, yeah, that buy-in becomes immeasurable. And a lot of younger players are playing, and there's a lot of juice there. There's a lot of energy there with the young guys right now due to the injuries, some of the veteran players. And they're all running with it. And because of that, it's the old, you know, three musketeers, all for one, one for all right now in Ottawa. And that's how teams are formed. Teams aren't formed by individual pieces. They're formed by a common thing. And that common thread right now is the story of Andrew Hammond.
Stone, Hoffman having wonderful rookie campaigns.
Yeah.
Matt Pumple scores his first NHL goal. He's a high draft pick of the Ottawa Senators. So you're right. It's a fun time if you're an Ottawa Senators fan. Although if you're Senators management, man, it's a confusing time to know what to do with the goaltender here. Because don't forget, the last time they had a three-headed monster and they had to deal with one of the goaltenders, Tampa got Ben Bishop. And Corey Conacher's now playing in Utica. So it's tough sledding if you're the Ottawa Senators and your decision. I guess it's a nice place to be.
Managers have to be careful at this time of year, period.
Don't fall in love.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't fall in love with the teams that you know, come up, rise to the occasion at the end when there's not the same amount of pressure necessarily as, you know, you might have throughout the course of a season. So you've got to weigh things, and because, again, you come back to it being a small sample size.
Yeah. Speaking of managers, the GM's meeting's ongoing in Florida as we speak. Today is day one. Nick Kyprios joins us from Boca Raton. Nick, how are you today, sir? Sunny and perhaps well-tanned already?
Yeah, hold on for a second. Yeah, chopped salad, please, and that margarita, is that crushed ice or is it on the rock? Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
That's right. The only ice Nick sees is in a blender right
if
now,
if there's
guys.
Another reason for us to just leave right now for this show, it's that comment right there.
Having been down there, I know the waiting area for the media outside the manager's room is next to the bar and restaurant, so
very nice.
He may well be ordering.
I'm sorry, are we on? Are we on?
Hey, Kip, what to you is the biggest issue the GMs will be discussing over the next couple of days?
For me, it's got to be goaltender interference. And we see it on a nightly basis where it just gets harder and harder for the officials. And they don't want the weight of the world on their shoulders, even though there's two of them. The guys have never been bigger and stronger. The traffic has never been greater in front of the net. That's one I think they just rather have it go in a different direction. So I think that the NHL will present to the general managers today, and we're just waiting for them to come out, what we can do with goaltender interference and how best to present it. What I had heard over the last little while here is it'll go through a coach's challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Coach will have a chance to call it at any time during the hockey game. He gets one, and he's got to make sure that he has a timeout. If he doesn't have a timeout, he can't call it. So that in itself is interesting because we've seen timeouts be burned to rest players off an icing where
yep.
you couldn't get to a line change. And all of a sudden now, it's really going to come down to when you want to use it. And if you have a coach's challenge and you lose it, you lose the timeout, and you lose a chance to possibly need it late in the game.
So
it's interesting.
So in theory, and I know we have a little ways to go on this, Kipper, with regard to getting it. This is a presentation. It still has to be passed down the road, any type of thing, anything being implemented.
All of it has to be passed on. With the exception of cameras in the post, we will see nothing until it gets signed off in June through the players' committee and the Board of Governors' stamp of approval. And that usually all comes together at the end of June.
Right. So just in theory, though, just according to what you're hearing through, you know, goaltender interference through a coach's challenge, if a coach uses it early in the game, whether it's called, yes, good or bad, right or wrong, irrelevant almost. What happens if it happens later in the game then? They're not going to be allowed to and it is goaltender interference, but the referees seem to miss it. That could open up a whole can of worms.
Well, the question is, when you do use it earlier in a hockey game, if you win it, you get to keep your time out.
You keep your challenge. Okay, and you keep your time out.
But right.
You
only get one challenge.
Yeah, my understanding is that they don't want a lineup to this. You know, there's the worry that the game is slow enough as it is. So I don't think we're going to see a parade to coaches' challenges as long as you don't burn it. You know what I mean? So I still think that the idea is that each coach has one chance to use it. But if you lose it, you burn your timeout. If you win it, you get to have a timeout later on in the game.
Now, they haven't had to print a new agenda for these meetings in about 5 years. It's been the same topics year after year after year. So, Nick, do you think, A, that this will finally get some traction, and B, how will it be implemented from the standpoint, will it be the referee looking at a monitor in the box, or will it be an interference guru out of Toronto?
That's the small focus groups today. And tomorrow, Scott, in terms of how this thing plays out, do they want all the control in the Toronto war room, or will they, in fact, let the official maybe go back to the penalty area, take a look at it on a monitor or a tablet, and then form his decision right there and then. So that they're really going to get a feel from the general managers in the next day or two in terms of what they finally want to present to the competition committees and then the Board of Governors. But my guess right now is they like the control in the Toronto War Room, and the first thought is keeping everything in-house under one roof.
Other burning issue, and this was spearheaded a number of years ago by Ken Holland of the Detroit Red Wings, reducing the effect of the shootout in deciding games. Yeah. The AHL has used a 3-on-3 model, extending after a whistle after 3 minutes of play, and they have found 5.7% of AHL games, 53 of 922, gone to a shootout this season. In the NHL, 14.2% of NHL games has gone to a shootout. How much... how much is Dave Andrews a hero or a folk hero around the GM's room in the NHL right now for being able to minimize the effect of the shootout? And will this, to Scott's point, have some traction as well?
Yeah, this one might be a little bit trickier than, say, a coach's challenge, because this really affects the players and specifically the star players. Now, the question is, do you add a couple of more minutes to overtime? Does it stay at 5 minutes? When do you officially kick into a 3-on-3 situation? Is it on a whistle? Is it at the halfway point? Mm-hmm. Is it a line change? All of this, again, is being discussed down here in the next 48 hours here. But you're right. It's apparent that all general managers are starting to hate. Not hate. That's a strong word. That's what my wife and my daughter keeps telling me.
Yes.
That. Don't like. It's not hate. It's don't like.
Good boy, Nick.
The shootout, right? Yeah. And over 50% of our overtimes go into a shootout, and they just rather see it in the game situation. But as I was saying before, this really will come down to the superstars, the Sidney Crosbys, the Ovechkins. Your star players will be taxed that much more because, let's face it, in a 3-on-3, who's gonna end up playing those minutes? It's your stars. And while people will sit there and say, oh, God, they make $8 million. What's another minute, mm-hmm. you know, in their lives? It's like, no. 3 games in 4 nights, 1,300 games in total in the NHL. Do the math on wear and tear. So I don't think it's a slam dunk that that the players would necessarily go for this without really truly understanding what this means long term when it comes to the players' health.
You know, just to play devil's advocate here, the star players and even a bigger amount of players have agreed for now to play in the World Cup of Hockey, which is going to be, I'm going to call it a 3-week detail when you consider
Billy,
yeah, I understand it's money, but this
cabbage.
Is about money. But a star player is willing then, Jeff, and I'll throw out the kipper too, to get hurt before the season begins. They're willing to put that on the line, and then they end up going into training camp and they'll have to rest a little bit, and if they're hurt then they miss season for their team too. They're willing to do that, but not this.
I think to Kipper's point, though, I think the point that Nick is making here, sorry to jump in, Nick, but for a lot of these superstar players, it's death by 1,000 cuts. It's like, and now there's this that you're adding onto our menu.
Yeah. And, you know, like, Billy, you know, it's all negotiable, but when you signed your $8 million, it wasn't for the thought that you would add another 2 minutes to a hockey game or you know, all of that. You know, like, it's like anything else in life. You know, you agree to a certain dynamics of your working environment, and then those working environments change, and so do a lot of other things. And that's the way the PA would look at this, is that this changes the dynamics of what was negotiated the first time around. The World Cup's a separate entity. It's the players sitting there going, negotiating a brand new deal and then weighing again the pros and cons of adding a World Cup onto their plate. There's the growth of the game and how it'll have a domino effect of maybe growing their salaries. So it's all negotiable, and the players have a right now to look at this and say, yeah, I'm not in agreement, it's a no-go. Mm-hmm. That's what the players and the general manager's competition committee is all about.
And I think the other concern when you put all of this together is all of a sudden if you've got one coach has a challenge, the other coach has a challenge, now you add two extra minutes or three extra minutes and a stoppage in your overtime, and a game still goes to a shootout, how long is the night going to be? I think
that's
there's a real
point.
Concern from the league standpoint, Nick, that they don't want games being any longer than they are already.
Scott, how long did it take them to scrap the dry scrape? And people,
scrap the
you know,
scrape.
In the States especially, right? They were leaving.
Yep.
People
oh, yeah.
were leaving. They weren't even sure that the game was over, not over, big delay. You know, let's beat traffic, whatever. And they didn't even last a season because it was such a concern on that type of delay. So I know for a fact there'll be some general managers coming out of the meetings today saying, how do we do this without slowing the game down even more?
Absolutely. Nick, something we talked about the other night in one of the games we worked, and I wonder if there's going to be any conversation amongst the managers, is that the scoring champion this year is going to be with the fewest amount of points in a long, long time. And we talked about that, in some regards, that scoring is down for the star players. Do you think there'd be any discussion about that?
I would think so for sure. There is a little bit of concern here on a byproduct of what you just said, Scott, in terms of the lack of power play chances. And what does that mean? That the standard of officiating is loosened up? Or, as one general manager just told me, the players are getting it more.
Mm-hmm.
That they believe that the players aren't taking the chances or putting themselves in vulnerable defensive positions where they can trip or hook a guy.
Absolutely.
So, you know what? We watch games on a nightly basis. I think there's an argument on both sides here. But, we've got as talented players offensively as we've ever had in the history of the game, and you watch what Tavares can do on a nightly basis. Ovechkin's still one of the best goal scorers in the history of the game, and yet we're looking at no player able to put a 100-point season together over the course of 82 games. So it'll be interesting. I'll start asking around, but I know it's been noted. Scott, it's definitely been noted by a lot of pretty powerful people down here.
I mean, Bob Gainey talked about it. It was a few years ago. The elimination of blocking shots.
How do you do that?
I understand. No, I'm saying, but that to me seems to be it's not like basketball where you can call a zone defense violation in the NBA. Block shots is the most obvious one to me because even, I wish I could say Kipper's old, but I'm actually a little older than him. But even in his day, there weren't as many guys blocking shots. There just weren't.
True.
There just were not. I mean, we're celebrating Alex Ovechkin blocking shots every once in a while right now, and that was unheard of before. So point is, with all these block shots and with all the bringing of the guys back to the front of the net, to me, that's the biggest thing, elimination of point totals.
Kip, we know you got to hustle because the GM's going to be piling out here in a couple of seconds, but is there, final question for you, is there any discussion of, and we saw what happened in Florida a couple of weeks ago with the goaltenders going down, any discussion about revisiting a house goaltender rule or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, that's definitely on the agenda. One thing's abundantly clear is that when we're all said and done here, there'll never be another scenario, I believe, that a player will have to think about putting goaltender equipment on like McKenzie did in Florida.
Right.
That could have been a complete nightmare, one of the bigger embarrassments in modern-day NHL history, and they want to avoid that. What does that mean? Finding a college kid in the area, having someone sit in a stand as a third goalie, something should come out of these meetings where the process has started that will never happen again. But
lines are already forming.
Close. What's that?
Lines are already forming at every NHL office.
Yeah. Yes, I know. And I think Florida down here, they've got
that's right.
A great campaign to find to find a third goalie that's willing to sit in the stands. So all of that'll get played out. But the days of a player on the bench contemplating putting goaltending equipment should be over, guys.
All right, that's perfect and good news. Thanks, Kip. Enjoy the next couple of days in Boca.
Oh, just in time. I see the waitress coming right now.
Oh, you poor guy. All right, very good.
There you get your virgin daiquiri.
Nick Kyprios from Hockey Central and Hockey Night in Canada joining us from Boca Raton, the home of the general manager's meetings. I want to remind you, as we speak right now, an announcement going on in Vancouver. Top prospects game being announced in Vancouver next year for 2016 will take place Thursday, January the 28th at Pacific Coliseum. So next year's crop of prospects from the CHL, which will include Jacob Chychrun, Sam Steele, Tyler Benson, Julian Gauthier, Sean Day, and sorry, Billy Jaffe, if he decides to go to the Everett Silvertips of the Western Hockey League, maybe even Austin Matthews, after perhaps turning down such colleges as North Dakota. Maybe he will be there as well. So top prospects
game. Maybe there's
game
just other colleges next besides year. North Dakota there.
I think everyone's after Austin Matthews.
I think everyone's
trying to get a piece of the young man who may go first overall next year. So in attendance, Ron Robinson, Ron Toygo, Tyler Benson, Trevor Linden as well. You can watch that one at sportsnet.ca. Want to pick up a conversation about goaltender interference, because I think there's a belief, I think wrongfully so, there's a belief that video review will end the controversy for once and for all about goaltender interference. If either the referees can huddle or if it goes to the war room, it will be cut and dry, black and white, just like tennis. The ball is in or the ball is out, and we will be able to tell definitively whether a play is goaltender interference. Even watching replays, and you guys have done it before. You guys have sat on panels, and it's like, all right, Scott, is that goalie interference? Scott will say yes. Billy, is that goalie interference? Billy will say no. I still don't think it's going to solve it.
Well, because of that, that's one reason. I know Brian Burke was a big proponent last year when we talked to him at the meetings. He was a big proponent, among several, of having the officials on the ice make the call at the penalty box, because they have a feel for what the activity is like around the net. Mm-hmm. And how much the crowding was. And they know the play. They had a feel of the play. They just need the extra assurance, where it might be a little more difficult
so don't go to
if
Toronto
you're disconnected on. In an office in Toronto.
Right.
Yes. First of all, they do that right now in Hockey East, College Hockey. In the States, they have a monitor in the booth or just outside of the penalty box area where they go off. They take their helmets off. They watch it with a video person down there, and the referees make decisions. I had a game last night. I was doing Boston College in Vermont, game three, and there was a goal scored by UVM, Chicago prospect Mike Pagliotta in front of the net, ends up jumping, coming down, skates maybe in the crease just a little, this and that, thought it was a good goal. They take off the helmets. They go. They reverse it. Vermont doesn't get the goal.
Hang on, but the original call was
goal.
Okay.
Well, the original call was goal because the front referee, what's his main job?
The puck over the line.
See the puck.
Right, yeah. Right. But, you know, now in the NHL, by the way, this year, remember they changed it when we had our meetings beginning of the year? They want them focusing more on what's happening in front of the net because we got all the video replays that can show whether the puck went in or not. Anyhow, in college hockey, puck goes in the net, they overturn the call. Point is this, it will never be 100% accurate. Now, they got the call right last night. I don't like the rule at college hockey where if there's any issue of prohibiting the vision in the crease area, whatever, he didn't make contact, I felt, but they said that enough of the area he was in that they got the call right. I'm cool with that. I don't like the rule. I digress for that. Let me get away from that for a moment. But it does take time. It does take time because these guys then go off the ice. They take their helmets off. They're watching it.
Yeah.
And they don't always, the other thing they don't do in college hockey well, which I think they would do better at the NHL levels, they don't specifically say, unless the producer from the truck can get it from the officials, what are you looking at? They need to make an announcement immediately saying play is under review due to potential goaltender interference or potential this or potential. That's what I think. But anyways, they do it in college hockey already right now.
What do you think, Scott?
But it has to help. I mean, there's no absolutes with
anything.
It does
help.
And it's going to get more calls right. And that's the main factor. And the one thing that makes it a little bit easier to make the determinations too is, and you hear the referee say it, you hear it coming out of the war room, is was the goalie allowed to do his job? Was he obstructed in any way? And I think you'll have the opportunity for the officials to get a better understanding and better viewpoint of that.
Troubling that, though, there are a lot of goaltenders, and we'll look at the one in Montreal as Exhibit A, who know very well how to make it look like they were interfered with.
Oh, embellishment's going to be an issue in this as well.
Well,
no
then
question.
You're going to have to. Then you're going to have to take that into consideration when you watch it on replay, and you're going to have to get inside the head of a player, and you're going to have to determine.
That,
I understand.
That goes back to my other point. Your eyes, Scott, see something different than Billy's eyes, and see different from Darren Millard's eyes, and Nick Kyprios's eyes, Doug McClain's eyes. Everyone's going to see it a little bit differently.
The question is, at the end of the day, does it help the officials on the ice get more calls correct? And is that your ultimate goal? Or do you want to just leave it to the human element?
Don't disagree, but how do we then marry that with something we just talked to Kipper about a second ago, which is length of game?
And trust me, I know. Replays add not 30 seconds. Those add a couple of minutes those right there.
So, I mean, the league, I mean, forever, when the game was 2:45 and the league was up in arms, like, hey, this game is just, we need to get this game around, what is it, 2:25 seems to be the sweet spot, 2:30.
Under 2:30.
Right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. And now all of a sudden there's this review. And to your point, Billy, these reviews don't happen in 30 seconds or 45 seconds. Now we're adding a couple of minutes on to the game.
And that's a big concern.
I wrestle with it.
It's a big concern.
Whether, you know, what is more important, getting the call right or keeping this game at 2:30 regular season?
I guess the way that you shorten those, I think if you have an incredibly defined rule. I mean, incredibly. Not just prohibits the ability of the goaltender to play the position, because I guess that can be judged differently too.
Yeah.
You know, like, do you go back to the skate in the crease rule?
We're going back to 99.
No, we don't.
Okay, but that saves time.
Simple answer.
But I agree with you. But that saves time because there's no gray. That's black and white.
If you're watching on television, by the way, you just saw some of the general managers coming out. Jim Gregory walking with Ron Hextall, Steve Yzerman a second ago.
You can always tell which GM's significant others packed the suntan. You know, the sunscreen. Actually, these guys don't get outside much. They're inside.
But to your point, time-wise, is if you all of a sudden get two challenges, an overtime that doesn't settle something, and then a long shootout,
that goes
you're 2:45
in
a easy.
All set, and it's a Tuesday, and you're looking at your watch, and the kids have to get to bed because they have to get to school in the morning, and you've got work in the morning. All of a sudden, you're saying to yourself, what did we just do here? What just happened to this game that we had
on a 7:30 start?
Well, that's why I think, and this is, I understand certain markets have a hard time with it, but I do think, and you have to kind of, if you're not used to it, get used to it, but 7 o'clock starts are much more ideal. Mm-hmm. I respect that there are certain markets that people say it's hard to get there at 7 o'clock, you know. I know, but I think overall that's the sweet spot start to 7 o'clock.
Seven.
Yeah.
Tricky for owners that have gone for the quote-unquote cheap land play and put the rink outside of the main city center. And we think of Ottawa and we think of Arizona. Challenging to get there after work, bundle kids up and get them there for 7 o'clock. Like, I get that.
I get it. That's what I'm saying. I get it. But if you can figure out a way to do it at, and you can't do it at 7:15 because of television. You want it, it's either at 7 or 7:30.
Did you guys get a chance to watch Boston-Tampa last week? I know we're getting heavy on time. We got to hit a break. Did you guys get a chance to watch Tampa-Boston last week? Because
I worked the game.
Okay, so you saw 3-on-3.
Yeah, loved it.
We saw 3-on-3.
Amen, hallelujah. It was awesome.
It was fantastic. It was exciting. And all I can think about is this is wonderful because all of a sudden the coaches aren't really a factor. And maybe fatigue has re-entered the game again. And I thought to myself...
Yeah, there's that word, though.
What's that?
Fatigue, which the players don't want to hear.
But the thing is, here's the beauty about fatigue. Fatigue leads to turnovers and mistakes and all these things we love about hockey. And one of the things that's left the game now, we all see players after the game do the classic Ottawa interview, which is done on the bikes. Fatigue isn't a factor anymore in the game. We all grew up watching hockey in the same era, guys, where by the time the third period rolled around, guys were dog tired. It's not in the game anymore.
No, and sometimes in overtime, by the way, you play your stars, right? But then there are other guys that get a lot of ice time that may not get as much in overtime and they get used in the shootout, you know, and all of a sudden
there's a Peter Klima sitting on the bench in Edmonton,
exactly,
Boston.
Exactly, and there might be better at 3-on-3 than all of a sudden he gets out there. I look at it.
Hey, you have shootout specialists, you can have overtime specialists.
3-on-3 specialists.
You do get fatigue on the icings. That's one time when we do see it creep into the game. If you've got a long shift and you ice the puck and you can't get the change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. But,
In case anybody out there is wondering about adding a timeout, heck no. I like the fact that hockey, I don't mind the one timeout. Because it's just one in general, it makes it at times important. It's not utilized nearly as much as in football and basketball, where, you know, the end of a basketball game, the last 6 minutes can take 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Hockey, I like this one. No, sir, we're not going to any more timeouts. No.
Yeah. Speaking of timeouts, we have to take one. We come back, resume the conversation.
The segue for
That's
you.
Very nice. You laid the carpeting very nicely for me to walk very gently on, Billy.
Really. That one right
there. No, you're nice. Nice little drop pass here from the bread line of the Rangers in the 1930s. We'll hit a break. We'll come back, talk about what happened on the weekend and what is still to come around the NHL. Four big ones tonight. Sportsnet's got Washington, Buffalo, Montreal, Tampa, Toronto, Edmonton, and on Sportsnet Pacific later on, we have Arizona and the Los Angeles Kings. Stay tuned on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network simulcast on the NHL Network stateside. This is Hockey Central at noon.
Welcome to Hockey Night in Scotland. Here's the whistle. Edinburgh, blocked by Aberdeen. McFinnigan to McDougall, to the other McDougall, to the other McDougall. Hold the phone, the McDougalls have gotten into a rammy. And he's been kilted. McDougall's been kilted. And the ice looks a wee bit cold.
Some things just make more sense in Canada, like a Subaru with symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard. Around the table, Billy Jaffe and Scott Morrison. Okay, so we put to bed what's going on at the general manager's meetings. Meanwhile, on tap tonight in the NHL on Sportsnet 1, it is the Caps and the Swords. That's the Buffalo Sabres. It is the Oilers. Is Taylor Hall back? And the Edmonton squad facing off against the Maple Leafs. That one on Sportsnet. Ontario and West, late game Arizona and the Los Angeles Kings. That one on Sportsnet Pacific. Meantime, 7:30 Eastern tonight. It is the battle for the tops in the Atlantic. It is the Montreal Canadiens facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And watching the Rangers game last night against the Florida Panthers, I said to myself, the Rangers are the fastest team in the NHL. And I always say that when I watch two teams, and that's why I keep going back and forth. The Rangers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. I can't figure out which is a faster team. I think it's the Rangers, and maybe I say to myself, the Tampa Bay Lightning move the puck quicker. But flat-out speed, I think I'd have to hand it to the Rangers.
Really?
How do you see speed in the NHL? I've got the Rangers as the fastest team. Could you make a case for Tampa?
Oh, in a heartbeat. Yeah, in a second, you can. Absolutely. And they move the puck beautifully in Tampa. The team that moves the puck, interesting, and I find the best in the offensive zone, though, times laterally, is the New York Islanders, although I know they're struggling right now. Yeah. But speed-wise, straight-line speed, team speed, I'd agree with both those teams are right up there. I can't tell you which one's faster or not. I can tell you that doing a few Tampa games the last week and being at their game in Boston and then, you know, doing their game tonight as well, watched a lot of them lately, they can scoot, they can motor at all four lines. Maybe the defense of the Rangers have a little bit more speed than the defense of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
You did the Montreal-Tampa game a week ago, and I remember we talked afterwards, and you said that night that Canadians had trouble with the Tampa speed. Yeah. It was Michel Therrien afterwards.
In Montreal's fast.
Yeah, Michel Therrien said afterwards, he said they had trouble with their energy. It wasn't the speed of the other team.
You're right, and it's an interesting way he put it, because I thought it was so noticeable was the quickness of Tampa. Because they're supporting of each other, the 6 to 8, 10 foot at most passes that they were able to make in the offensive zone because of their motion, their quickness. That's what broke down the Canadiens. Now, granted, they only won 1-0 on an overtime goal.
Mm-hmm. And a bit of a great play that was a fluky goal, ultimately.
Yeah, but they own the puck for a lot of that game.
And Tyler Johnson with the overtime winner in that one. Tyler Johnson, one of the great stories of the
year. That
was
a great
NHL
goalie battle, though, wasn't it?
It was. It really was. Yeah. And Bishop is, he's 8-1-2 career, I believe, against Montreal Canadiens. Mm-hmm. He's been okay this year. He's been okay to good. I like Ben Bishop a lot. I want to really, really like him, but he needs to continue to step up his game. Gave up a very soft goal to the Bruins last week that was a big difference in the game. A long shot from Patrice Bergeron. He can't have those. Now, he and Vasilevsky have split the last six games pretty even, but there's no question that Bishop we'll start tonight. And Tampa's coming off a very poor effort, they felt, against Winnipeg.
And they're dinged up with injuries. I mean, Coburn barely plays a whisper for them after coming over from Philadelphia. Now he's gone. Andre Palat, that stings on that second line, who was
Well, three guys got hurt in that game.
Three guys in the game against Montreal. Three guys. And Palat's things, that second line may be the best second line in the entire NHL when they're on.
You're one of the best first lines.
Well, but the thing is, see, like, if you look at the points per 60 analytics stat, Tyler Johnson's in at number two. Andre Palat, I want to say, is five, and Kucherov is in at seven. Like, it's remarkable.
That's my point. They couldn't.
The job that line is doing.
Yeah.
Rick Nash is, of course, number one.
And speaking of injuries and Winnipeg, Byfuglien and Myers are back at practice today. So that's news for the Jets.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes.
They're back in a wild card spot. The Los Angeles Kings play tonight against Arizona, so they may scoop
up. And it looks like Hornquist is going to be out for about a week.
Yeah.
Say the Penguins.
Weird weekend for injuries for the Pittsburgh Penguins. As we kind of bounce around topics here on Hockey Central, that was a bizarre weekend for the Pens. Mm-hmm. Tough loss yesterday against, I suppose, a desperate Detroit team. Really good goaltending yesterday from Peter Mrazek. We didn't see Sidney Crosby play on
Saturday.
Did
they go with him, you think, for a little bit?
That's a you know what? It's funny. I was asked that question about the playoffs, and if it started today, who would be your starting netminder, given if both of them were healthy? Man, I had a tough time coming up with an answer. I want to say Jimmy Howard, but I just don't know whether that's because I want Jimmy Howard to be a great goaltender, and I still, somewhere in the back of my mind, remember watching Peter Mrazek play with the Ottawa 67s and saying to myself, he'll be a great junior goaltender and that's it. You know, it was a lot of fun watching him in junior, watching him at the under 20s, jumping up and bouncing off the glass when the Czech Republic beat Russia. But he has done a remarkable job of turning himself into someone that everyone now believes can probably carry the load, at least for the short term for the Detroit
Red Wings. Yeah, I don't think, short term. You know,
we don't know, Billy. We just don't know.
I understand. I'm looking for the Red Wings' next game, and it's going to be on Wednesday. No, they're off until
they got Florida.
Thursday.
Yeah, they got a break. Yeah.
They're at Florida, Tampa, back to back.
Yeah, so they have a break. So
Thursday,
right
Friday.
There, you think that they're going to split them with the back to back right there? They're going to split them regardless. But do you say to Mrazek, since he won last game, being yesterday, you know, you get back after you earn the crease. You get to keep the crease. I got to think they're going to try. And of course, they're going to try and get Jimmy Howard going again, though. Mm-hmm. But the team has not been good. You heard Mike Babcock in-game and post-game talk about how the effort, what we needed, was finally there.
Two teams needed those wins yesterday. Sorry, Scotty. Go ahead and
I was just going to say, for everybody, but for goaltenders in particular, we all know the playoffs are a different beast as well.
True. Two teams needed their wins yesterday. Not that it was desperation time, but it was getting to be a little uncomfortable for both Detroit and the Washington Capitals. Washington came up big. Nick Backstrom is now the all-time assist leader. Let that gravity of that sink in. All-time assist leader for the Washington Capitals and maybe the most underrated player in the entire NHL, although I think that secret's probably out there now, that Backstrom is an elite-level player in the NHL.
I don't think he's undervalued. I don't think you know what I mean?
Because we don't talk about him like we talk about Taves and Crosby and Kopitar and these types of players. Getzlaff.
He's not going to sneak up on anybody that's playing against him.
True.
You know, if you want to talk about a guy who's undervalued, underappreciated.
Thomas Plekanec, Montreal.
Maybe. Yeah. A player like that, but I'm talking about Nick Backstrom is so respected. Mm-hmm. So respected by everybody that plays the game.
But as far as the conversation goes amongst the elite in the NHL, at what point when you have the conversation, how long does it take you to get to the name Nick Backstrom? It takes a while. But then when you look at, you know, his draft year, he's number one in points. And there's some big names in that draft. There's Taves, there's Staal, there's Phil Kessel, Claude Giroux. He's number one. And consistently, you know, and this is the year where I think we're really starting to pay attention to just how good 19 on the red team is. Do we start
and
to include,
is he also
do we start,
fulfilling his potential, though? I mean, really, is he also fulfilling it?
See, here's the interesting thing about Backstrom. Backstrom was the only player last year at the end of the season who went to management and said, I was awful. Mm-hmm. I need to be bad. Everybody else, I was okay. You had a decent season. Backstrom said, that was terrible. I need to be a better player. And he's come back and he's been hanging with the big dogs. So the point where you could make a significant case. I know Carey Price and I know Rick Nat. You could make a case for Nick Backstrom for the Hart Trophy this year. That's how good this guy's been for Washington. And as much as Alexander Ovechkin gets...
He could be on the five on the ballot, but I think we know who the...
Oh, I think we know who's
the
getting
winner is.
I think we know who's getting this one going away.
Let's go to the West.
Sure.
Sweaty palms in Nashville?
Yes.
Up two goals,
absolutely.
And then you surrender four in the third period against Anaheim?
Wow.
Why would they be nervous?
2-8 in your last 10?
Not scoring. Unproven with regard to playoff scoring, obviously. Now, Peter Laviolette, I know what he brings come playoff time for teams, especially coaches in the first year. But, Scott, I mean, this is a team. I guess if you want to find the positive, and I always try to do that, that they're going through – are they going through their lull now?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
And they turn the corner at the right time again? Maybe. They hadn't gone through their lull before. This could end up being the old perfect scenario in the sense of, all right, yeah, we were kind of crappy for a while. We knew it. Couldn't get out of it. We worked our way out of it with good habits, better habits. But you're talking about a lot of guys who come playoff time that are, relatively speaking, unproven to provide the offense that they've been providing all year long.
That's key. That to me is the key point. You look at that first line, whether it's Mike Ribeiro. Sure, James Neal has been there before. You look at Mike Ribeiro. You look at Philip Forsberg. He's a rookie. There's a lot of guys. I mean, the back end is wonderful. The goaltender is all world. But there's a lot of guys up front that haven't been there and haven't been able to do anything significant in the postseason. It's a great point.
Well, and I think there was a thought with Forsberg because he hit the wall because he had a bit of a drought there, 8 or 9 games.
Oh, he hit the college wall. Oh, no, wait, that's a Goodrow kid in California.
Well, exactly. And they asked the question about Goodrow because he had gone 13 or so games without a goal, but he still had people jumping out of their seats. There was still a lot of jump to his game and whatnot.
Such a fun player. Okay, we got to get to the Hockey Central. 3 stars. Who would like to go first? How about the Hall of Famer, Scotty?
Well, I'm going with Andrew Hammond. Hamburglar comes through once again, and just an amazing story. A great kid. We had him on the show a week or so ago, and he's humble, and he's just soaking it all in, and it's fun to watch, and it's fun when somebody like that isn't taking it for granted and has had to work for it and had to wait for it.
Yep, amen. Billy?
Well, I always like getting a Wolverine if I can, and so I was going to go Matt Hunwick. Hit a goal. And
oh, says, very nice. Saw that. Yeah.
But I didn't. So I went with my next favorite team because I played with this glorified beer league team called the Chicago Chargers for years.
Okay.
Equivalent of the Allen Cup here in Canada. And so I went with a Charger from Alabama Huntsville, Cam Talbot. That's why I picked my stars today. Cam Talbot's been awesome on this run. Whether it lasts or not is irrelevant. He signed for one more year at over $1.4 million. But he has come in. And while Henrik Lundqvist is the king, we know that. I mean, this guy is—he's at least in the—he's not the court jester, but he's in—he's—he's in the—he's up on stage with the king up there. He's doing great.
He's a prince.
He is a prince. There you go. Thank you.
Remember him watching him play with Hamilton of the OJHL and thinking that he went to Alabama Huntsville, where he honed his craft playing with Clark McLean.
There you go.
Son of Doug McLean. I'm going to go with Timo Polkina. I know Peter Mrazek was
the
star.
Mean Doug McLean's taking credit for Cam Talbot too?
What do
More
you,
than likely.
What do you think? How long have you known D. McLean Esquire?
Sorry. I made the kid.
Timo Polkinen. 2 goals yesterday for the Detroit Red Wings. He's played a bunch of games this year for the Red Wings and is still the number 2 scorer in the American Hockey League because the Detroit Red Wings need yet another prospect hot stick in their lineup on the horizon. Timo Polkinen, my first star.
And shoots. I know. And shoots some more.
You know, there's so many guys like that, too. And Polkinen's another. You just think to yourself, do you have to ice down your shoulders after every game? Like, does a trainer go to Polkinen right away? Nyquist was another one when he first showed up. Just shooting and shoot. The shoulders are going to eventually melt off the young man. A couple thoughts as we round out today's edition of Hockey Central. Is the Joe Thornton-Doug Wilson situation put to bed now that the owner has intervened and talk to the two parties? Is this over? Nothing to see here?
You're the award-winning journalist. Do you believe everything that you read?
I think they... No, exactly. I think
you believe everything you wrote.
Well, occasionally. I think there's a muzzle on it, but it's not gone away.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, please. It's not gone away at all. There's no way about it. They'll try and make it... You know what? They'll try and make it better for the sake right now of the team getting to the playoffs, but this is a proud man in Joe Thornton and an opinionated, outspoken guy and the owner, you know, he... I respect the owner getting out there and saying, let's take care of this.
He had to.
I respect that. Like, he didn't say, I'll let my management take care of it. I'm going to get involved, and that's when you need the owner to get involved.
Big question about the San Jose Sharks. You think it was a disaster last year, losing 4 straight games against the inevitable Stanley Cup champion Los Angeles Kings. What happens to Teal if they don't make the playoffs? The cynical person would say nothing, because what happened last year, nothing. Mm-hmm. If they don't make the playoffs, is it different this summer?
Has to be. It has to be. They tried it one more summer to just, you know, do the captaincy issue and readjust a little bit. No, there has to be changes. They don't make the playoffs out there.
He wanted to get younger. They did to a certain extent, but not to the extent that I think ultimately they wanted.
Interesting thing about that, they tried to get younger, and you look at the funk that Matt Nieto found himself in, Tomas Hertl. Joe Pavelski this year seems to only find the magic when he's playing with Joe Thornton. So, once again, they're back with the big dogs. Thanks for joining us today. Back tomorrow for more Hockey Central at noon. Thanks, Billy. Enjoy the game tonight. Montreal and Tampa. Scotty, enjoy Toronto and Edmonton. We'll talk to you tomorrow.